on the telephone to kick us off in this second hour, as always, on Tuesdays, it's writer Colin Fleming. Hello, Colin.
What's up, Kimball? Long intro there. You're having a dance-off.
Well, you know, I was I was out socializing. I see Carrie waving frantically, and I realized, oh, I'm on the radio still. Imagine.
Yeah, I thought it was like this new format where we're going to rock out a little bit harder.
Yeah, we're doing all albums between interviews today, and we want to get that FM feel, even though it's AM radio.
I hear you. A blend is always good.
No question about that. We want to talk this week about, I don't want to call it your blog, though it is billed as such, but it is more than that. Many Moments More is a chronicle of your work as an artist and a journal. Tell us, for anybody who doesn't know, can you talk a little bit about what you'll find there?
Sure. I think what you'll find there is not what you will normally find or ever find, not just with the blog, but really in the entire milieu of diaristic, journalistic writings that there has ever been. And you're right, I think, to say it's not really a blog. It's just kind of a catch-all term I use, because when you have something that's online and it's a component of a website, you just call it a blog. But what I decided to do about a year ago was to document a number of things in a series of books that I was going to write in front of the public that would eventually be collected between hardcovers. But for now, I was going to take readers along on various journeys. And those journeys could be everything from what someone who's had their life broken apart does in order to keep going. So there are things that we've discussed on here, like climbing the Bunker Hill Monument, the trip to the ballet over the weekend, what I'm reading, listening to, how I'm coming up with new ideas, and also exposing at the same time the bigotry and the discrimination that dominates publishing. So you can see somebody who has something come together in real time, where there is the story in the fancy venue, the segment on NPR, the op-ed in the million circulation newspaper, and then the fallout from the industry that says, we don't like that you got those things. And the journal pulls no punches. It names names, because the reason people don't read right now is not because of Netflix, short attention spans. It's because of a highly corrupt industry, which I am basically trying to take down as it attempts to blackball me. So there's a lot going on. And you'll get excerpts from work as they're written in real time that come out in whatever journal or some fragment from a novel, that kind of thing. And it's basically three books long at this point after a year.
And I don't want to paraphrase you, so I'll let you say it much better than I can. But one of the challenges you've had in the publishing industry is people who don't seem to understand that you don't fit into a niche, that you write about so many different things, that you are knowledgeable on a lot of different subjects, and that just doesn't fit the normal descriptor that people in the business have of writers today.
It fits the normal descriptor, I would say, less so than ever before. And people want to try to categorize me, and the thing that you'd have to do to summarize what I am is to use terms that people are not comfortable using on their own, and they tend to wait for lots of people in the group to say it. Somebody doesn't want to say out loud that someone who might be our leading expert on film could be our best fiction writer, could be better on the radio, could be better at op-eds, could be better at sports writing. But what if that person was out there? What happens if we had this modern-day Da Vinci, Michelangelo, who was that mind? And so I thought, one thing to talk some talk, it's another thing to walk some walk. And I can open up my mind and who I am and my ability, and I can put this all out there. So you could see this person who's publishing 3, 4, 5 things a week or whatever it is in this industry in which they are also blackballed, which creates this huge paradox, producing thousands and thousands of words worth of work on the blog. And I have people level charges at me of being a syndicate. It's just like I think to myself, just go there. Maybe somebody is this. The only reason to doubt that someone could be that is your own incredulity, not the results that this person is putting up. and is putting up on a daily basis in thousands of words on the blog. So that was part of my thinking, too, to illuminate my own singular journey. And I know kind of other benchmarks of people who have undertaken diaries that became great works of literature. I just thought, let's do this, too. Why can't you be the best diaristic writer as well? And so it's just something I do. And it's also something that I use to order my mind, to keep me disciplined, to keep me going, to have something to show at a point in time when maybe something didn't come together that week. It's a way to create art on a daily basis for me without even having to try.
And you mentioned in our communication of people like Pepys, Thoreau, Tynan. I think of the journals of John Cheever. Flannery O'Connor is another example. Are there some journals that you respect more than others through literary history?
Sure. Respect in the sense that I thought, okay, these are the targets. These are people you're going to be competing against. Not just this notion of, oh, I'd like to emulate that person. I don't believe in that. I believe in being a target, and what a lot of other people want to do when they see a target is hit the target. I don't want to hit the target. I want to go past the target to my own target. And so I've read all of the million-plus words of Pepys. And a lot of what Pepys is doing is he's not expatiating. He's giving you straight-up diary that he's writing, I don't feel like, with an idea for an audience. And his diaries are invaluable in that they document his particular time. But a lot of it is, got out of bed, forgot to put the coffee out. It's annoying. My wife annoys me. I have to go to work. Like, that's really what he's doing a lot of the times. You're not going to get a ton of philosophical heft. You're going to get what a life would have looked like for someone in that time period in his particular class structure. Delacroix is someone, the artist, who you can get those ruminations on art where he's saying, oh, yeah, I'm looking at this canvas, and this is what I want to do with this color, and then modulate to this color. And between those two, there's going to be this liminal color that no one's really ever discovered before, and that is what I'm going to base the rear side of this horse on. So you get all of that. Tynan, he didn't keep them for that long. Nijinsky, which I recently wrote about his diaries, the ballet dancer, he only did it for a couple months, and he basically wrote his to stop himself or to document himself from going insane. So there are plenty of good diaries out there, but they tend to have this aspect of either just being this record of their time, but not this attempt to make a huge contribution to literature. And I thought right now, too, as I'm going through what I'm going through, the title of this journal, Many Moments More, comes from the quote, heroism is endurance for one moment more. And people right now, I think, struggle a lot more than they let on. And I'm pretty open about the struggles I'm going through. It's not fun to be hated by an entire industry. And that might sound crazy to people who know my work, because they could think, I just saw you in the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post. Complicated. And that was another reason I wanted to do it. But I think it's inspirational for people who are struggling with whatever they might be struggling with to see how someone else is trying to build themselves up so they can continue on in their life and get to where they wish to go.
So a couple of questions about the process, Colin, when it comes to writing the journal. Are you conscious of an audience when you write this? Because it's gut-wrenching at times, it's painful. As you said, you pull no punches, and yet it's eminently readable. Is that because you're aware that people will be reading this rather than it just be clearing out the filing cabinet of your mind?
I have certain rules in my head that were there when I undertook this. And one of those rules was, if it's true, you can say it. And I find that when I say the truth, no matter how seemingly controversial it might be, nobody ever comes back at me, because they're going to look at the way I've expressed myself, and they're going to think, I'm not going to pick this hill to die on. I'm not going to be able to usurp the argument from this person. This is not going to work out well for me in terms of a final result. Now, they might go off and gossip about me, but the reality is, Everyone in publishing has already done that. This was my way to wrest back some control, to hold people accountable, where it's like, I will tell you how this works. I will tell you about the dirty deals and the discrimination and the sexism rampant in this industry. And then the other thing is, I know that some people who know me might read this, and they might be touched upon in it in some way, not some way that's going to impact their lives negatively because it's your friends or your family or whatever. But my thinking is that I write this as though I was writing it just for myself, but I'm so in tune to audience all the time. Because when you write something, ultimately, the only person that matters is the person on the other side of the table. That's who you're writing for. So I don't play to any crowds or anything like that, but I know if I write to the best of my ability and I distill truth like I think I uniquely can, that's going to carry the day, where the audience is going to be millions, potentially. It's going to be all-inclusive. And so when I get to the point that I'm trying to get to in my career and people walk to this blog retroactively, there will be this entire story, this entire narrative that I will not have to work at that time in getting out there. It will all be here, and people will be like, oh, this is a museum that was locked before, and now we can come in and, oh my goodness, how was this going on all of this time under our noses?
You share so much, and you're so open and so honest in the blog. Do you worry at all that in some sense you might lose part of yourself by giving away so much to the reader?
No, I don't think so. I would perhaps feel that way if I didn't think that there was always more. I could live a trillion years, and in some sense an artist, depending upon how good they are, does. And I will always have more. There will always be something else that I've never expressed. There'll be something that I'm writing in my head during a conversation like this with you that's not present before I got on the phone. That's just something, for whatever reason, for as bad as things are, and sometimes it can feel like a curse. I came into this world with, there was always going to be more. And so I could sit there at the desk all day and type away, and there's always going to be something more. There is every single day. And right now, it's vexing because I think, oh, I'm doing this, but who's going to see this right now? And that's probably the hardest part of my existence, where you're writing the work, you know millions could love it, you know it could exist in 2,000 years, and because of a blacklist, because of a closed system that resents success when it's someone self-made, to the point that the more I achieve, fiction in Harper's, op-ed in the LA Times, I know when I get those things, my life the next day is going to be worse. It's going to be harder to get work. And that's just something I could either take on and battle, or I could die in anonymity. And I ain't here to die in anonymity.
So, and you've written about this on the blog as well. You come on the show every week, great segments, week in and week out, fascinating conversations, but nobody subscribing to the blog from the downtown audience. So I want to challenge people listening to do that. Make it easy for them. How does one subscribe to the Many Moments More blog?
Ha! Yeah, that's true. So we've been doing this. You've been kind enough to have me on this show since almost coming up in 2 years this summer. And not one of you downtownians, as you bill yourselves collectively, has signed up for the blog or joined the ranks of my 32 Twitter followers. Come on, I know some of you have to like these segments. Yeah, you go to colinflemminglit.com, and it's no double letters, colinflemminglit, as in literature, not that I'm on the alcohol.com. And there is a tab at the top called Many Moments More Blog. There are other tabs because everything is organized as a kind of digital museum. So if you like reading about the Beatles, you can click on the Beatles tab. If you are a sports person, there is a sports tab. There is a radio tab with a whole lot of NPR and Mr. Kimball and all of that good stuff. And you just subscribe. There's a little form. You just enter your email address, and you get updates when there is an update to the blog itself. It goes right into your inbox. Actually, if you have Gmail, it goes into your spam. So fish it out of there.
There you go. Well, I do it. I get it every day, sometimes more than once a day. It is always a fascinating read. So, yeah, Downtown People, subscribe to the blog. You're going to enjoy it. You're going to be fascinated by it. At times, you will be horrified, but you will never walk away bored. I can guarantee you that. So I want to know. We need to get somebody, some Downtown People, to subscribe to the Many Moments More blog and get this thing going. And you want to be in there early in the process, so later you can say, oh, we knew about this. We knew about this guy's talents long ago. That's how we roll here.
Always better to be early than late, my friend.
That's what I say. Absolutely. Tell the Red Sox that, will you please?
Duh, what is going on with this hangover that they're carrying on into 1 in the morning with this deplorable starting pitching? And I'm tired of these Nesson flashbacks to last year. It's like, shouldn't we maybe, I don't know, move forward? Life goes on.
Just need to get home, get those rings, fly the pennant. Everything will be better once they've come back to New England.
Home at 3-8, dude, for an awkward ring ceremony.
Woo! Feel the excitement of 2019. Colin, yeah. Always a pleasure, my friend. Have a good week, and we will check in with you again next Tuesday.
Okay, sounds good.